Hello and welcome to the Homegrown Food Summit. My name is Marjorie Wildcraft. I am your host and guide on this amazing series of presentations we have. This next one we have up for you is all about worms. Yes, I know, but really worms are a very exciting thing. The compost that you can make from worms is an incredible fertilizer for your gardens. Also, making compost tea is another fantastic way to just have an amazing amount of yield and abundance from such simple things and actually scraps. Our presenter is Tara Ray Kent, and this presentation is very simple, straightforward, easy to follow. This is definitely a beginner's level, inspiring. Shows you in 10 minutes and $10 how you can get started making a worm bin. But Tara Ray was born and raised in Wisconsin, although she currently lives and gardens and farms on the Front Range of Colorado. Her love affair with worms began in 2003 when she started her first worm bed and she began studying permaculture. Since then, she's received numerous permaculture design certifications, and she's also a certified permaculture teacher. She's got 8 different types of vermicomposting systems, which she'll show you in this presentation. Tara Ray also works as an ecologist and teaches on many topics, including composting, vermicomposting, chickens, and permaculture designs. This is a wonderful, very simple, get started presentation on worms.
Hi, welcome to Red Worm Magic. My name is Tara Ray, and today I'm going to be discussing the ins and outs of vermicomposting or worm farming. An overview of today's talk includes current food waste statistics, why we should be composting and vermicomposting. I'll go over the biology of the worm, and we'll talk about building a worm farm, the supplies needed, the food that they want to eat, and go over a little troubleshooting. I'll also discuss how to harvest the castings or the worm poop when it's done, and what are the uses for these castings or compost, and a little bit of talking about compost tea, and a little time for questions. So, some statistics on food waste. Did you know that 34 billion tons of food is thrown out annually? And it costs the US over $100 billion. It's known that half of all the food ready to harvest never even gets eaten, and sometimes doesn't even get removed from the fields. 30 to 55% of the curbside garbage is organic material, and it's mostly food waste and yard materials. Some of the benefits of composting and vermicomposting include closing the loop in your waste stream. Also reduces your garbage costs. The less you throw out, the less it will cost you. Vermicompost is free fertilizer. You don't need to go to any store and buy any bagged compost. Composting also reduces greenhouse gas emissions, and especially methane and carbon dioxide. Composting turns your brown thumb green. Compost happens. It's pretty easy. And it's also apartment-friendly composting. It's really easy to have a worm bin in your apartment and not have a smelly outside bin. Composting is also very educational, and kids love it. There are 3 main types of worms. Anaic, which are burrowers like the nightcrawler seen in the photo on the right. They utilize large expanses of soil and need large areas to move through. They cannot live in a worm bin like I will be describing today. The second type, endogeic, are field worms or horizontal burrowers. And then finally, the epigeic, or the red worms, the red wigglers, they live in the top 30 inches of soil and break down decomposing materials. Acinia foetida, the Latin name for the red wiggler. Worms are 70 to 90% water, very similar to humans. And they are exothermic or cold-blooded. They need an external source of heat to stay warm. They're also mucus-coated, which protects their water content and protects them from external toxins. Their body cavity is cleomate, which are like vertebrates, a fluid-filled cavity, but just not as developed. Worms have lifespans of 4 to 8 years. The red wiggler, Essenia foetida. Foetida in Latin means foul smelling. And this is caused when they are roughly handled, they actually exude a pungent liquid. And this is presumably an anti-predator adaptation. They're also negatively phototropic, which means they don't like light. They burrow down into darkness. They have no eyes, but they're very light sensitive. Even 30 minutes of sunlight can have detrimental effects from the UV radiation. It's also noted they are European natives, but they've been introduced into every continent except Antarctica, and they do sometimes displace native species. You're probably wondering how worms reproduce. They're hermaphroditic, meaning they have both male and female sex cells. When it's time to mate, they find a partner, and they line up their clitella, which is the thick white band on their long bodies. They exchange male sperm cells through this pore on the clitella, and fertilization takes place in a cocoon and is excreted from the pore. During worm reproduction, 2 to 4 baby worms hide inside of this cocoon until they're ready to hatch. It takes 30 to 70 days to hatch when they have an 83% hatch rate. Then it takes another 50 to 70 days for baby worms to mature to reproductive age. Animals can even ingest these cocoons, and they will pass through their digestive system undigested and unharmed, excreted in another location, which is one way of how populations of worms spread. If conditions are less than adequate, these cocoons can actually become dormant like a seed until the conditions are better. I've also heard that adding crushed eggshells can stimulate reproduction. Vermicomposting, or worm composting, is the final end product of the breakdown of the organic material that the worm has eaten. These castings are nutrient-rich natural fertilizers that also are soil conditioners. The photo on the right shows a vermicomposting system under the chicken roost. As the chicken poops through on the paper, the worms eat it up and convert it to vermicastings. Vermicastings improve root structure of plants. They also provide soluble nutrients and increase resistance to disease, acting as an immune system for the plant. It increases microbial activity in the soil, including fungi and bacteria and other protozoas. It also increases the organic matter in the soil and the water holding capacity. There are 3 main types of vermicomposting systems. The continuous horizontal flow system, as seen in the picture on the left, is a windrow. Decaying materials are placed horizontally, and the worms move through the system, finding new food and converting that food to vermicastings. The non-continuous system in the middle is just a Rubbermaid bin. The worms do not move anywhere besides within its own bin. And then on the right is a continuous vertical flow system where the worms can move up and down through the layers. Here's some examples of some vermicomposting systems. These first 3 pictures are continuous vertical flow. These are your standard worm farms that you're going to find online. They run about $100. The one on the left, the can of worms, I really like this system. It's a large circular system. The worms move up and down through these layers. The center one I also have is a Worm Factory 360. It also has a worm ladder in the bottom reservoir so worms can climb up if they have escaped these layers. The Sun Leaves Wormtopia photo on the right is a vertical migration system as well, similar to the one in the middle. It's square and it allows the worms to move up and down through 4 layers. Here's another sleek example of a vertical migration system called the vermicomposter. This next example is called the Worm House, made by Acre Urban Farm Kits of Denver. It's also similar to the previous continuous vertical flow systems, except it's made from wood, a birch wood which is sustainably harvested. It's sanded and finished and has two coats of a hive seal, a food-safe clear sealer. And it looks great in my kitchen. Here are some outdoor ideas for worm farms. Sonoma Valley Worm Farm has made these large totes of plastic with spouts on them. These are non-continuous bins, meaning the worms cannot move outside of this system. And another great idea, utilizing an old bathtub. This bathtub worm farm is situated inside a large hole in your backyard or on a farm. You can layer worms and paper and food scraps and then cover it with a piece of burlap or fabric. The right picture of Good Life Permaculture utilizes this bathtub method and then builds a bench over it. Stacking functions. This next example shows you how to utilize an in-situ worm tower. What you will do is drill a bunch of holes in a big PVC pipe, 6 inches, and then bury it in the ground. In this tube, you can add your paper and food materials and a worm starter. This is a continuous vertical flow system because the worms can move throughout the column. This next example is similar to this worm tower. This is called the Grow Tower, and it's a garden tower project. It has a 50-cell system that allows you to plant things in the column while having a vertical tube in the center that is the worm factory. You'd put paper and decomposing food scraps in the center, and the worms can move in and out of the column, fertilizing the plants that you're growing. The right picture is a version that you can do yourself with a 55-gallon barrel and some PVC pipe. This last type of worm farm is a non-continuous 1-gallon ice cream bucket. It's very useful to take on the road like I do in hotel rooms when I travel for work. Just one little bucket with some shredded newspaper and some worms, and then you can add everyday coffee grounds, tea bags, and vegetable matter. So now that you've learned all about worm biology and the different kinds of composting systems, now you probably want to build your own worm box. Sure, you can buy one of the previous systems, but it's really easy to make your own from two Rubbermaid totes or kitty litter buckets, 5-gallon pails, or wooden crates, whatever you have on hand, and have a lid for one. Have a drill available with a 1/4-inch or a 1/2-inch drill bit. Have newspaper shredded and damp, but not shiny. The shiny colored newspaper tends to have heavy metals associated with it. Also have your worm starter and maybe a little food. And an optional is a spigot and a washer to put on the bottom reservoir. First, take one of the Rubbermaid lids and drill some holes in the top. These are breathing holes for the worms. Also drill some holes in one of the reservoirs. This will be the inside bin that would allow any excess moisture to drain into the lower reservoir. If you would like to add a spout in the washer or spigot for the leachate drainage, drill the hole for this in the lower bin where it would collect the leachate. If you add a spigot, then grab a cinder block or make some sort of stand to put your worm farm up on so you can drain the liquid. Next, you have all your holes drilled and your reservoir is ready. Shred up some of your newspaper and make sure it's damp, but not too wet, and put it in the bottom of this first bin. And then add your little worm starter. And pocket this all under this shredded newspaper. You can add a little piece of food on the side if you only have a handful of worms, or if you have a pound of worms, add a coffee grinds and juicing pulp to the corner. This will ensure that they have food to eat right away, but don't overdo it because you could end up with excess mold growing in your bin initially. These worms need a little bit of time to acclimate to their new home. So now you've built your worm farm. And you've added your worm starter and maybe a little bit of food. and a whole bunch of shredded newspaper. You can never have too much shredded newspaper. Now place your bin somewhere warm, but not too warm. These worms like 50 to 75 degrees Fahrenheit, just like us. They're going to slow down when it gets cold, and they will freeze at freezing temperatures, and they will bake at high temperatures. So keep them out of the sunlight and keep them in a cool, dark spot, but not too cold. Basements are ideal, garages if they don't get too hot or too cold, your laundry room, your kitchen. Now be patient. Check on these worms in a few days. How much have they eaten? If you start with a pound of worms or 2,000 worms, they're going to eat a lot and you can almost start to feed them regularly. However, if you get a small starter from a friend, it will take them longer to acclimate and they have in there fewer worms, so that means fewer mouths. Acquiring red worms is quite easy. Many places online sell worms and will ship them right to your house. Uncle Jim's Worm Farm sells 2,000 worms, or about a pound, for $29. Also, Gardner's Supply Company, Red Worm Composting. Another option is to check your local farm and garden listing on Craigslist. There's lots of people who will sell castings, and then maybe they'll sell you a handful of worms. Or you can contact a local garden club. Or talk to your friendly permaculturist. You may not know it, but lots of people are vermicomposting nowadays, and you may even have a friend who has a worm starter for you. Now, what do these worms eat? Well, it's important to note that worms eat their own weight every day. There's varied estimates under optimal conditions they will eat several times their weight. But a good guideline to remember is they will process about a quarter to one times their weight in a 24-hour period. So if you start with a pound of worms, you can actually add a pound of kitchen scraps every day. They eat a varied amount of food. They are mostly vegan. They like fruits and vegetable scraps, eggshells, paper towels, also shredded newspaper that breaks down with them. And the smaller the food particles, the better. They have little mouths, so it's easier for them to digest. It's also noted that the worms actually eat the microbial community that's breaking down these vegetables. So even if you have moldy food and moldy bread, the worms will enjoy it. Just make sure that it's broken up to smaller and small pieces. Research has indicated that vermicomposting can actually significantly reduce levels of pathogens like biosolids and accumulate heavy metals. But let's hope you don't put those in your bin. There's also a few things that you should not put in these worm bins. And that's meat, dairy, citrus, onion, oils, or feces. And these just throw off the pH of the bin, or they add bacterial communities that you do not want inside of your home. Well, starting a worm farm may cause you a few troubles. And I've had my share of troubles in the 10 to 20 years I've been doing worm farming. So it's totally normal and it's nothing that you can't handle. Do you know what fresh compost smells like? I think it smells like tropical forest floor. It smells really good and deep and earthy. This was what your bin should usually smell like, and that's what finished compost smells like. So if you notice an obnoxious odor, it's usually because the bin has been too saturated and has produced anaerobic conditions. That's what the drainage holes in the bottom of that inside bin is for, to drain out that excess fluid. If you think that it's still too wet, you could add a little bit more dry material, like drier shredded newspapers instead of really damp newspapers. You also may notice excessive fruit flies, and this is usually due to too much food in the bin. The worms can't handle eating that fast enough, and you've had fruit flies laying in banana peels and apples. What you would do is just shred up damp newspapers again and cover the whole bin. Your food should always be covered with shredded damp newspaper. If you notice that worms are leaving the bin, it may be because they can't breathe. The conditions inside of the bin are too wet because they breathe through their skin, and that wet condition doesn't allow them to breathe, or you didn't drill holes in that top cover of the bin. So drill holes or let the excess fluid drain out and your worms will be happier. You may also notice a lot of other critters present in these bins, and this includes centipedes and sow bugs, those roly-polies, also earwigs, spiders, gnats, potworms, fruit flies, fungus gnats. And this is totally normal. Your worm bin is an ecosystem. And it's known that compost piles can have up to 1,000 different kinds of invertebrates associated with it. So it's okay as long as the system isn't stinky and these critters aren't out of control and becoming problematic like fruit flies on your kitchen counter instead of in your worm bin. Also, you may find that there could be maggots in your bin, and this is unusual and abnormal, and it may be because you introduced meat, dairy, or feces into your bin. If that's the case, then try to find that source, remove it from your bin, and cover everything back up with damp, shredded newspaper. Also, spiders sometimes like to set up a web in the corner of your bin, and this is totally normal because they're hunting fruit flies. If you notice a heavy, moldy growth coming off your bin, you've fed them too much food. Lay off and cover up again with shredded damp newspaper. Now, harvesting castings can be a little bit tricky, especially if you have a non-continuous bin. If you have a non-continuous bin, just like your Tupperware bins, you can put a light source off to the corner. This will shoo the worms away from that light source so you can harvest those castings in that corner. I also like to try their favorite food method, which means I put a piece of melon in the corner and I kind of herd the worms to that corner. And then you can harvest the castings in the other side. If you have a non-continuous bin of a Tupperware bin, you can make it a vertical migration system by adding another Tupperware with holes drilled in it on top of that bin. Just add shredded newspaper damp to it with more food. There's also an item called the casting harvester, as shown in the picture. You can put the castings and the worms in there, and it actually separates the castings from the worms. I think that this is probably a little harsh on the worms, so I would opt not to do this. Now, what can you do with the worm castings? Well, you can use them as top dressings for indoor and outdoor plants. I also use it as a seedling booster when I start my tomatoes in the spring. My favorite method of using castings is to brew compost tea. It's also a great soil conditioner and maybe even a business venture. Compost tea is actually pretty easy to make. Take a 5-gallon bucket or a garbage can and add some water. Make sure it's dechlorinated. If it's not, wait a couple hours and the chlorine usually evaporates. While you're doing this, you can get a mesh type bag and put a 1/2 gallon of castings into it and tie it up with a zippy tie. Then tie it to a small piece of string or rope and dangle it into the garbage can or 5-gallon bucket like you would a tea bag. You can have an air pump, which makes things a lot easier, or you can stir this brew over the next 24 hours here and there, and then allow some time. So it takes about 24 to 36 hours to brew a nice batch of compost tea, and it should be good and bubbly when it's done, indicative of biological activity. Other optional ingredients that I like to add to my compost teas include liquid sea kelp and fish emulsion, molasses, which is an added sugar source for the bacteria, mycorrhizal fungi, which usually comes in a powdered form from a grow store, green sand, which has micronutrients, including glacial rock dust and phosphate, also humic acid, the final product of decomposition, humus, and occasionally I add oatmeal to increase the fungal activity. I've learned a lot of things over the years of worm farming, including the colony is an organism and it's its own ecosystem. And sprouting seeds is really easy. In that lower left-hand corner, that's a photo of an avocado tree. Just throw your pits in the worm farms and they start sprouting. Also, my pets love worm leachate. I hope you've enjoyed my presentation on worm farming and you're really excited to go start your own. All right, now that we've finished up our worm talk, you may still have a few burning questions about worm farming. So I hope these next few slides will answer those questions. So does vermicomposting work with other types of worms? Well, There are a few types of worms that vermicompost will work with, and the standard ones are going to be your red wigglers that you're going to buy online. Nightcrawlers are not considered composting worms. Remember, they're large soil movers. They like expanses of lawn. They're also deep diggers, and they're good for your lawn and garden, but not necessarily for these bins. And they also don't reproduce as quickly as red wigglers. Do worms have eyes? No. They're sensitive to light, though. They're negatively phototropic, and they like to dive down into your worm bin. Well, do worms have teeth? No, they usually grind their food with a gizzard, which by muscular action. You may wonder, what other kind of bedding can I use in these worm farms besides shredded newspaper? Could you use office paper? Well, yes, you could, but beware of the bleach or the dioxins that are contained within these papers. I have seen somebody use a worm bin with shredded office paper, and the finished compost, instead of being black, is actually a gray color. I would reserve this office paper for outdoor use. The ideal bedding material includes the shredded newspaper like I talked about, even paper egg cartons, ground up pizza boxes. Remember, pizza boxes with the grease on them are not recyclable, but they are compostable. You can also use dried leaves, bags of leaves from your backyard, or shredded pieces of cardboard, or even dry straw. Make sure all this bedding material is very damp, but not too wet. If I cut my worm in half, will it grow back? Or if you accidentally smush it, will it grow another appendage? No, definitely not. These are annelids, a different kind of worm than the flatworm or the planarian that I'm showing you in the picture. Remember when we did experiments in high school where you cut the planarian at certain lengths and see how it regenerates? It actually has stem cells that allows it to regenerate body parts. A worm does not. Is it safe for my children to play with the worms? Yes, absolutely. Children love to play with worms and other invertebrates. It's a great educational piece, but it's less safe for the worms. Remember, worms are made of mostly water, and they desiccate easily when taken out of their bin. So be very gentle with your worms and restrict their handling. Well, where do the dead worms go? Well, after the worm has completed its life cycle, which could be a year or 4 to 8 years, the dead worms just return to the system and you likely will not see them. They'll be broken down by other microorganisms and then be recomposted by the invertebrates that are in your system, including the other worms. If you find an unusually high amount of dead worms, maybe the entire bin has died, you'll need to investigate further. Was it too hot? Was it too cold? Was it too salty or too acidic? Figure out what your problem is and maybe change the bedding. If you need to re-inoculate with other worms, find some new worms and inoculate the bin. What if the food in the worm bin isn't being fully broken down? Well, this is likely due to large chunks of food matter, as seen in the photos, thrown in the bin. It's going to take a long time for microorganisms to break down this food and the worms eventually eat it. Remember, they have little mouths. So make sure your food is chopped up finely. The smaller the pieces, the better. I have even heard of people blending all of their worm food in a blender and then pouring it over the bin and covering it with damp wet newspaper. This is really not necessary, but just make sure your pieces are broken down enough the worms can start eating it. Will the worms escape and crawl around my house? Definitely not. Remember, worms are made of 70 to 95% water, so they desiccate or dry up easily. Worst case scenario, you're gonna have too much moisture in your bin and they'll start crawling up the sides because they breathe through their skin and inundation and liquid does not allow them to do so. Or you don't have drainage holes on the top. What about other insects in my worm bin? Well, a teaspoon of finished compost or the vermicastings contains billions of microorganisms, including bacteria, fungus, and protozoa, and actinomates. But also, we talked about other invertebrates in the bin, the ones that you can actually see. The most common invertebrate that you're going to see are the sow bugs or the roly-polies, the photo on the top right. You'll also see springtails, centipedes, millipedes, fruit flies, slugs, pseudoscorpions, potworms, and also maybe mites. The unlikely invertebrates that you'll see in a bin are like bees, solitary bees, bumblebees, mason bees, ladybugs, wasps, and even more unlikely, ants. Sometimes people ask, why are there mushrooms growing out of my worm bin? Well, what is common is that white fuzzy mold, or rhyopis, that species on the left, which is that fuzzy mold that usually grows on strawberries. Occasionally, you'll have this mold growth even coming out of the wet, damp newspapers on the top of your bin. This is easily remedied by just reducing the amount of food material you're putting in the bin and covering that mold up with wet, damp newspaper. The photo on the right are parasol mushrooms, which grow in woody material. So I have not seen any mushroom fruiting bodies growing out of my bin. You usually see just the white fungus. While this tortoise is not a candidate that will be attracted to your worm farm, he does like vegetables. But will your worm farm attract other rodents like mice and rats and other types of pests? Well, it is possible if you have your worm farm outside and uncovered that you could have a problem, but it's very unlikely that rats and mice are going to climb in this bin. I've had worm farms outside with no other issues, including having mice present as well outside. So this is not something that you should worry about. If you have fresh food that's exposed on the top, well, maybe a raccoon or a rat might want to get into your bin, but this is a very unlikely. And the final question, why am I vermicomposting again? And what do I do with their poop? Well, remember, we're composting because it's best for the environment and it's free fertilizer. And what can you do with their castings? Well, we talked about harvesting their castings from a finished bin in a vertical migration system, and you can use it as top dressings for your indoor and outdoor plants, and it's also a great use for making compost tea, as shown in the barrel on the right. Well, I hope I've answered all your other questions. Now go out there and build yourself a worm farm and support global warming.
Okay, well, there you go. If you want to get in touch with Tara Ray, click on the button to the right. She's got a wonderful website with a lot more information on worms and what you can do there, and the best places to source worms, different styles of bins. Definitely get in touch with Tara Ray. I promise you, you're going to want to do some worm composting at some point in time in your growing career. So why not get started now? All right, this is Marjorie Wildcraft, and we have a lot of other really amazing presentations lined up for you here at the Homegrown Food Summit. I'll catch you on the next one.